Good evening. I'd like to welcome everybody here tonight for the Monday, for the September meeting of the regular meeting of the Board of Directors for Eastern Lancaster County School District. At this time, Mr. Brian Conroy will lead us in a moment of silence and the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, the first thing we have on is the agenda, approval agenda modification and approval of the agenda. Do I have a motion on the agenda?
So moved.
Been moved. Is there a second? Second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. That brings us to citizens' comments. At this time, Justin will read the ones that were sent in to us, and then we'll get to the ones of you in the crowd.
Yes, Mr. President, we had five comments that were submitted online. The first comment is from Earl Kreider at 125 Ewell Road, East Earl, PA, 17519. Mr. Kreider says, please join me in prayer. Eternal Heavenly Father, creator and sustainer of all good things, tonight we especially thank you for the freedom we enjoy being able to worship God in the manner in which we choose here in our United States of America. We thank you for our Elanco school system, the administrators, the principals, the teachers, the students, the parents, and also the many other staff members, especially tonight. We thank you for your dedication and the commitment of each of our Elanco school board members. Also tonight, we thank you for your high academic standards they all uphold. Thank you for your help in building sound character in the student body. Thank you for their help in the building and their building wholesome relationships between the students and teachers. Thank you for their help in developing good sportsmanship and good school spirit. Most of all, we pray for your continued wisdom and guidance and unity for each of our Elanco school board members as they continue to make sound decisions and judgments for each of our schools today that will also have a profound effect upon our future generations. In the strong name of Jesus Christ, our Savior, we pray all of these blessings. Amen. The next comment is from Jennifer Hording at 7 Meadow Lane, New Holland, PA, 17557. Mrs. Hording says, I would support the 50% occupancy regarding spectators at sporting events like volleyball and football. I believe this can be done safely and is in the keeping with other social guidelines for restaurants and other large gatherings. Thank you for considering this. We appreciate all that Elanco has done for our students and families during this very difficult times. Cherie Mendy at 1580 Morgantown Road, Morgantown, PA, 19543. Ms. Mendy says, please approve 50% capacity of occupants for all sporting, concert, and performing arts events. The families would like to be in attendance for their children. Friday night football affects not only the team. Please consider the families of band and cheer. By allowing more spectators, morale will surely increase. Thank you for your consideration. Abigail O'Neill, 1390 Sheep Hill Road, East Earl, PA, 17519. Ms. O'Neill writes, dear board members, I greatly appreciate each of you for your service during these trying times. As we maneuver the regulations set forth as a community, there is a reoccurring topic of spectator capacities. As a senior, I hope to see my dreams of having my family and friends there for my final moments as a student athlete come true. Although we can't have the great year we imagined due to the pandemic, I encourage you to plan. Plan for the best and go for there. We cannot control the government's orders, but we can set a plan in place for spectators despite the ongoing state limitations. We can prepare for the day that the bill gets passed. We can plan to make this year the best it can be for our students and faculty. Once again, I thank you for your time and dedication to this community and encourage you to control the things that you can by planning for the passing of the spectator bill. Respectfully, Abigail O'Neill. Barb Spencer at 101 East Conestoga Street, New Holland, PA, 17557. Ms. Spencer says, on behalf of the GS Softball Booster Club, as part of the GS athletic community, we are in full support of the 50% occupancy for all sports. We believe that it is important for athletes to have the full support of their families at their events. In addition, the student section is a great opportunity for peers to support each other outside of the academic day. Thank you for your time and consideration and making this vote for the benefit of our student athletes, their families, and their peers.
All right, thank you, Justin, and also thank you to all the people that submitted their comments online. We're going to handle it a little bit differently tonight. Whoever's going to be first, please come to the microphone, hand your card in. You have up to 5 minutes, give or take a little bit, to give your comments. Also state your address also.
Stephanie Shirk, 1645 Silver Valley, East Earl. Good evening. I'd like to share brief comments from the Pennsylvania Senate this afternoon in regard to opening up school activities to supporters while following COVID-19 safety measures, as was presented to you last week on behalf of the GS Football and Volleyball Booster Clubs. Senate Majority Leader Jake Corman reiterated that the Senate will vote to override Governor Wolf's veto this afternoon of a bill that would allow school districts to implement their own health and safety plans for sports, extracurricular activities, and spectators when the measure is received from the House of Representatives. Under the Constitution, because the bill originated in the House, that chamber must first gain a two-thirds majority vote in order to override the governor's veto. It would then go to the Senate for consideration, where a two-thirds majority vote is also needed. In originally passing House Bill 2787, the House voted 155-47, with only 135 votes needed to override a veto. That's 20 votes more than necessary, clearly a majority. The Senate originally passed the bill by a vote of 39-11, with 34 votes needed for an override, again, a majority. Senator Corman stated, for months, Governor Wolf has stubbornly refused to work with or trust anyone outside of his own administration, not legislative leaders, not healthcare professionals, not local government officials, not school officials, and now not even the members of his own party who supported this bipartisan bill. The longer this go-it-alone approach continues, the more Pennsylvania communities will suffer. House Bill 2787 earned the support of Republicans and Democrats alike, because it entrusts schools to make the best decisions possible for their students and communities. It includes safeguards to ensure any resurgence of the virus can be contained. This year hasn't gone as anyone had planned or prepared for. We all know that by now. But instead of putting our school district, families, and Elanco learners' whole health into the hands of one individual who does not know our Eastern Lancaster County community well, I urge you to stand up for our community. Our local community voted for each one of you to be a voice and stalwart supporter of our local ideals, not just a checkmark vote for whatever one individual who would like you to voluntarily enforce his edict to keep families and communities separated and not united. I'd also like to acknowledge the discrepancy in the 25-person indoor capacity. Right now in your auditorium, there's more than 25 individuals sitting in there in support and in wanting to know what's going to happen tonight. I just would like that noted. I urge you to increase capacity to at least 50% of capacity at the Elanco School District facilities. Thank you for your courage to serve our local community.
Thank you. Yep.
Am I allowed to take this off
as a speaker? Sure, yes. Okay. Go ahead. Yes.
All right. I don't usually, sorry for my appearance, I don't usually wear stuff like this on the day to day. I just came from a scout meeting, so my apologies. But I'm going to start. I'm going to get right into it. Click clock, were the sounds of the heels of my cowboy boots made as I entered the gymnasium to the girls' volleyball semifinal match. Why was I wearing cowboy boots, you might ask? No, I did not happen to use them. I did not happen to use a horse as the means of my transportation to the match, even though I was coming from Lancaster County. Rather, I was adhering to the tradition of participating in the student section theme. The night of the semifinals match, the theme was entitled Crazy. Therefore, I thought it was most suitable to pair my boots with a checkered bathing suit bottom, a neon shirt, and a button-down conveniently decorated in pumpkins. Did you think my outfit was done? Luckily, it was not. My upper half included a beaded necklace, a wizard hat, a pair of oversized baby blue sunglasses, and in my right hand, I held a foam finger that said, Number one. Once myself and my extravagant garb made it to the student section, I looked around to see a plethora of students dressed in everything from a banana suit to the infamous piece entitled Amish Chicken. The student section was key in helping the girls move through the ranks as the fierce competitors they proved themselves to be. Though this might be sad to hear, never have I seen higher student participation in any other area at Garden Spot than in the student section, not even on a standardized test. Being an athlete myself at Garden Spot, I understand the importance of what an audience can give to the game. It fuels you as a player and gives you the energy to reach your goal as a team. Student athletes and their parents have spent innumerable hours preparing for these final years. Some are sitting with us today. All for it to be stripped away. It would be a grave disservice to not allow students, parents, and the community to have the chance to watch sporting events. Being involved in an eclectic mixture of extracurriculars, such as student government, health council, National Honor Society, FFA, and boys volleyball, I have the unique capability of hearing a multitude of perspectives from the student body. Students have been subjected to drastic changes in scheduling and have been forced to adhere to strict mandates. While I recognize the need for such precautions and the fact that student safety is the number one priority, a middle ground must be met. Many of those that I have talked to have become frustrated with the inconsistencies that are seen in response to the COVID-19 by our district. I will give you an example. I am currently enrolled in Net and Racket Sports, a gym class offered by our school district. The last unit we participated in was tennis. We were asked to wear a mask while playing doubles, even though we were outside, positioned over 6 feet apart. Might I also add, tennis, it's a non-contact sport. Luckily, students listened and wore their masks as we were directed. On the contrary, when we turned to the cafeteria, masks all of a sudden become non-existent. The running joke currently at the school is that COVID-19 seems to take a lunch break just as the students do. This is since hundreds of kids can be seated in close proximity with no protective equipment worn, such as a face mask, while eating lunch. I recognize that wearing a mask is not up for discussion. The example was just provided as the insight of student frustrations and inconsistencies. The frustrations become exacerbated when students are now being told that they cannot attend extracurricular activities. I see the importance of a mask, and I make sure, as a cognizant member of society, to wear one. This is not only for my own safety, but for the safety of others. Recently, the director of the Center for Disease and Control and Prevention, the director of the CDC, said that a mask offers far more protection from transmitting the disease than a vaccine would offer. I know that if we allow students, parents, and the community the chance to watch sporting events, they will adhere to the guidelines instilled by the school board. If the school board does not take the chance to regulate the watching of school sports, a far deadlier situation will be at the hands of the district. I can guarantee, and it's happened this past Friday, students will begin convening together in a large number to view the events at locations outside of the school, whether it's their families or in local parks. At these outside events, there will be no safety precautions taken and masks will not be worn. Why not take the chance as a school board to have the upper hand on the situation and give students the opportunity to view the event in a safe and effective manner by social distancing and wearing a face mask? The student body is with each other every day, day in and day out. Classrooms have exceeded CDC guidelines, and the cafeteria has become the epicenter of how to not handle a pandemic. So, to say that we as a student body are not allowed to watch a sporting event, even safely, after coming from an overcrowded classroom, is hypocritical. At this time, you must stray away from your personal beliefs and ideologies and consider the feelings of the constituents that elected you to all of your seats. Student morale is at an all-time low. Our school is facing a situation that could change the face of the entire environment of Eastern Lancaster County School District for many more years to come. Numerous high-level schools such as Harvard published research saying that there is a definite effect of participation on important outcomes like reading and math achievement, meaning that when you allow students to participate in extracurricular activities or you build student morale in the school, they achieve higher in standardized testing such as math and reading. I'm sure we all know that. I'm sure we've all heard it in the news. This quote directly shows the importance that extracurricular activities have in creating a sense of belonging has on students in relation to achievements such as grades like I just explained. Being the senior class president, I have seen each day I have seen each and every activity taken away from a group of hardworking, dedicated individuals. At this point, students are numb to the atmosphere that has been created. Students are no longer enjoying themselves at Eastern Lancaster County School District, even though that may sound sad. It's the truth. It is becoming a place where frustrations flourish, just as COVID-19 flourished across our nation. Please consider allowing spectators at sporting events by keeping the Spartan Way in mind tonight of doing what's right, doing our best, and doing for others. Thank you.
Thank you. Who's next? Okay, thank you.
Well, what I have to say is certainly not going to be that put together. I'm Jenna Good. I'm at 27 Fairway Drive. I have four students in the district, but I'm here specifically for my seventh grader. She plays volleyball this year, and it was very, very hard for her to try out for a sport. This is the first sport that she loves, and I'm going to get a little emotional. It means so much to her and us, my husband and I, just to be able to watch her. Live streaming, while great, and we appreciate the effort, it's just not even close to the same. She needs to hear us in the stands, cheering for her, just to keep her morale up, you know, and all of that. Even if it's just at 50% occupancy, even if my husband and I have to take turns, you know, social distancing, masks, all everything, just as a first-time middle school parent, with my daughter for the very first time in a sport, we would greatly appreciate if you allowed us to watch. Thank you.
Thank you. Who's next? Okay, thank you.
I'm Nikki Stern, 1437, excuse me, Weaverland Road, East Earl. So, good evening. I'd like to start by thanking the administration and the board. Thank you for listening to us last week. We felt truly heard, and we appreciate all the time and energy you are devoting to this cause. I would also like to thank Mark. And Mark, I'm not going to turn around because I'd like to speak into the microphone so everybody can hear me. I want you to know your student athletes, your booster clubs, your teams, and your community know you've been put in a pretty tough spot. And we appreciate all that you are doing for us. We know you know our students and that you care about them. And you are doing your best with what you've got. Thank you. Another big thank you goes out to all the parents, fans, and community members who have shown up tonight. They are out there in the auditorium in support of Garden Spot Athletics. We've got a room full of people who've taken time away from their families and their homes to be here supporting us. They understand the importance of tonight's vote. They showed up for their community, they showed up for their school board, and they showed up for our student athletes. And now we are asking you to please show up for us. I am guessing after last week's meeting, you've had quite a lot of research and quite a lot to think about. I'm also guessing you may have already come to a decision in your mind about what you're willing to do about this spectator fiasco. I am asking you, though, to please set aside any preconceived ideas, if you have them, and to listen to what I have to say with an open mind. I am here tonight in support of all sports, all booster clubs, and all extracurricular activities. I truly hope everyone gets what they are asking for. But right now, please understand, I am speaking directly to girls volleyball. Our team, our gym space, and our needs. Our situation is unique, and our team deserves to have their own piece of your upcoming board member conversation. What I mean by that is this. When the public is done speaking tonight, I ask you to please consider the following. Our volleyball team deserves to have their own separate, focused, detailed conversation. We are asking you to please look at us as the individual team that we are. We are asking you to please consider how these numbers and percentages affect us uniquely in our relatively small indoor space. I am asking you to also think about this. Does this have to be a one-size-fits-all recommendation, a one-size-fits-all approach? I don't know if it has to be. I'm asking you. Or is that just what's comfortable and easiest to do? Never, ever, ever has a fellow teacher or administrator come into my classroom or my gymnasium and said, You know what? Let's stop providing adaptations and modifications. Stop differentiating. We're moving to a one-size-fits-all curriculum. Do this across the board, and you are guaranteed to get the best results for everyone. That would never happen. You teach to the individual child. You coach to the individual athlete. You look at each individual team as they are, where they play, and figure out what is safest, most responsible, and best for them. We are once again asking for 50% capacity. While the 25% that was mentioned last week is appreciated, we believe at 50% we can actually offer a safer, more responsible option for our community and our fans. That may sound backwards, but it's not. And that is why I need you to please keep an open mind. In a moment, I'll explain what I mean. In the meantime, please remember that 25% capacity number mentioned last week is simply a number. Is it a law? Is it a mandate? Is it some kind of absolute rule? I don't know. I said I knew, but then I was told I didn't. But I don't know. But last week it was admitted to be simply a number. A number that a group of well-meaning individuals came up with that they feel most comfortable starting at. While appreciated, the fact of the matter is this. These numbers and the reduction from 50% to 25% affect the volleyball team more in our current space than they affect anyone else. And that is why we need our own individual conversation to be had. The good news is you, the school board, are also a group of well-meaning individuals, and you can decide how to move forward. We don't have to start at 25%. We can start at a place that makes sense for all of us, and we believe in our space that number is 50%. Last week, someone mentioned the opinions of Elanco teachers and support staff and how any of this might make them feel. What would they think of students attending games and then coming back into their classrooms and their buildings? Would they feel more at risk, and would this make them more uncomfortable than maybe they already are? As an educator, I can appreciate that thought and concern. But if we look at this realistically, and I'm so glad that we had a student who was brave enough to come here and speak tonight, if we look at this realistically, at a reduced 25% capacity, that leaves us no room for our complete student spectator section. None. That doesn't mean they won't be watching, though. I can assure you our student cheering section will still be watching our games, only instead of being monitored in a controlled, mask-wearing, socially distanced environment, they'll be piled together in someone's basement, watching our girls being live-streamed on a big screen, while sitting on each other's laps and eating chips and Cheetos out of the same bag, while also sharing sodas and ice cream. This sounds extreme, but this is real life. There will be no mask wearing. There will be no socially distanced anything. We know these kids, and they are already planning it. However, at 50% capacity, our complete student section will have a safe, socially distanced, mask-wearing environment in which they can responsibly support our team. At a reduced 25% capacity, with no room for our full student section, we are potentially putting teachers and support staff at more risk than if the students were simply allowed, under strict and monitored guidelines, to be watching and cheering for their peers in person in our gym. In all actuality, 50% capacity is the more reasonable, more responsible, safer option for all. When considering our request for 50% capacity, please also consider this. Our gym is a controlled environment. There are no outside factors to contend with. We have no concession stand or vendors available. There will be no wandering around looking for food or goods. They don't exist. While we certainly wish we had our large gymnasium and more space to work with, the smaller old gym could actually be a blessing in disguise right now. In this smaller space, it is easy to control who enters and exits our gym. It is easy to control who's adhering to mask-wearing, socially distanced guidelines in our gym. We can actually see everyone in our space at all times. We've got an awesome booster club and parent volunteers who are willing to step up and help monitor the protocols and health and safety procedures that will be put in place. Our volunteers can help monitor tickets and spectators entering and exiting. They can help enforce safety guidelines like mask wearing and social distancing. And the following expectations will be set both verbally and through posted signage. When you enter, you are there for the sets and the match. You enter, you sit, you observe, you exit. This is easy to do in our space. Children, big or small, if they are present, they need to be with their parents at all times. No up and down the bleachers, no standing on the floor, no hanging out in the hallways. Everybody who enters sits, observes, and exits. No exceptions. When spoken out loud, I realize some of this sounds harsh. However, I trust our community and our fans will understand and will choose to do the right thing for the greater good. I trust our community and our fans will be so grateful for the opportunity to support our girls, the possible what-ifs, and those who might not follow the guidelines will not be an issue. However, if they are, we have worked too hard, and most importantly, our girls have worked too hard, for any sort of health and safety guideline disrespect to be tolerated. Individuals causing problems or disregarding guidelines will be promptly asked to leave. At 50% capacity, we can safely accommodate 225 people. That is not a lot, and that is why these percentages are so important to us. At 50% capacity, this allows both schools to have their entire teams in the gym together as they should be. This allows both teams' JV players to sit in the stands, socially distanced, masked on, after their game, not waiting 2 hours on the bus or in the hallway, and they will be able to cheer for their varsity teams. This allows each player to have some family members present to support them. This allows our student section to responsibly support their peers in a controlled, monitored, safe environment. I need to reiterate, we have a huge following. Our girls are the biggest little team this school has ever had. If we don't allow our student section in, which we cannot do at only 25%, they will still be watching, and it will not be in the safe, controlled, responsible environment we have the opportunity to offer them. It was mentioned last week about allowing visiting fans into our space. And while that is a wonderful thought, in our current gym, we are not sure that's possible. Actually, if we're being honest, other schools should be coming up with their own plans to see their own athletes, and we completely understand if we are not allowed in their doors. We don't think we necessarily need to worry about taking care of them. We need to worry about taking care of our team, our student section, and our community. I know that also sounds harsh, but again, that is why volleyball needs to be looked at separately. Our space and our needs are unique. I am almost done, I promise. There is a silver lining, though, and this is important. The fans and spectators who will be entering our gymnasium are the same people and students our players and families are already in contact with and are already around on a regular basis. Essentially, we'll be hosting an already put together volleyball cohort with very little outside contact or contamination. In closing, I ask you to consider our request for 50% capacity with not just an open mind, but also an open heart. All things considered, 50% capacity, not 25, provides our students, our families, and our community a safer, more responsible option for supporting our team. We know you care about our kids and our community. That is why you've chosen to take on the underappreciated role of school board member. We also believe in your desire to effect positive change. We are now asking you to believe in us. Voting yes to 50% capacity shows us you trust us, you believe in us, and you want what's truly best for all of us. It is a busy week for our volleyball team. Our high school girls are scrimmaging tonight. Actually, right now as I speak, they're playing and hopefully beating Manheim Township. This vote is also happening tonight. We have our season opener against Manheim Central this Thursday right here at Garden Spot, and two of our varsity players share a birthday this Friday. It's an exciting week for our volleyball family. Please help us celebrate by being the board we believe you to be. Please vote yes to 50% capacity. Thank you.
Thank you. Who's next? There's two left. Okay, thank you.
I'm Carla O'Neill, 1390 Sheep Hill Road, East Earl. I have nothing written down. Like Nikki said, our girls are scrimmaging right now. They just went off the court. So we have no sound, we have no score, we can't see anything, but we got to watch them on a little screen. It sucks. I'm just going to say that. I'm a senior parent. I've watched my daughter play practice for 6 years. And I just want to watch her play. That's all I want. So if you could just vote for 50% and let us watch. That's all we need. Thank you.
Thank you. What's next? Okay, thank you.
As a parent of a high school junior who plays football, I want to share some of my thoughts. First and foremost, my husband and I feel strongly both parents should be present at the games, not only to support our child and his teammates, but also, heaven forbid, he suffers an injury. Our 16-year-old son has participated in organized sports since he was four. He has never played a game without a member of his family there to support him until this past Friday. And I asked, let me skip that. As I sat at the scrimmage here against Columbia, it was very clear more people could safely have attended that game. The limits put into place for outdoor gatherings are suited for those in closer proximity. We have a stadium that can hold approximately 3,000 people. At just 25% capacity, we can hold 750 people. If our state's restaurants can now be open indoors at 50% capacity, I feel we can support our teams by allowing 25 to 50%, hopefully 50% capacity, in our outdoor stadium. To avoid crowds leaving, attendees could be ushered out by sections. To have support in the stands can make a huge difference in the student's life and would mean so much to those who want to share in the important last moments of their child's high school years. Please allow parents to watch their child's games in person.
Okay, thank you for all the comments tonight. One more? Oh, Jim. Sorry, Jim. There you go, sorry.
Jim Shirk, 1645 Silver Valley. You can tell, based on the moms that are here tonight, there's a lot of husbands at home that don't win a lot of arguments at all. These guys have made a great, great, compelling case for why it's not just about the numbers. It's not just about going against what the governor thinks. It's about we want to see our kids. As from the booster side, we stand with our plan that we presented last time. We think it is a valid, well-thought-through, safe plan in order for this school district to move forward. There are a number of school districts that already have done this. There were football games played last week that had 400 or 500 people inside of the stadium with no problems. They were sanctioned events, and they had no problems. They actually had the blessings of their solicitor at that time. So I'm very curious what our solicitor is going to have to say tonight. But it has been done. That precedence is out there. We just ask you to take these things into account. The Booster Club is here. You're not going to be alone. Mark, you're not going to be alone. Any of these things that need implemented, we've got tons and tons of help out there willing to step up, do what's necessary, wear the mask, do the social distancing. We want to see our kids. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. All righty. Moving on to next would be the action item. I believe we'll, Dr. Hollister, I guess this would be where we open it up for any comments from our solicitor?
If Jeff, you want to make an opening statement, and then I would turn it over to the board for discussion. Should introduce Mr. Jeff Litz is the district solicitor. He is the person who is sort of our primary contact for any kind of legal issues that we have.
So, good evening, folks. Good to be here. So Dr. Hollister did ask a series of questions, and prior to answering them on Friday, and I believe that's been circulated with everyone, we did share guidance with all of our school district clients, which is 25 solicitor clients and a number of other special counsel clients on Tuesday, September 15th, about this, because we were getting questions from multiple school districts, many in this county, but other counties as well in the south central region of the state. And the question was, does the governor's July 15th order, which places limits on the congregate size of gatherings and events, apply to school district sporting events? And if so, do the developments we've been reading about in the newspaper have any impact on that? And just for purposes of review, because this was in response to one of the questions we received from one of the board members, is the governor's executive order that was issued on the July 15th, Section 3 of that applies to all events and gatherings. It doesn't just apply to businesses. It applies to all events and gatherings, and that's defined as temporary groupings of individuals for defined purposes that take place over a limited time frame, such as hours or weeks. And then that order gives some examples, fairs, festivals, concerts, et cetera. The Department of Education, or PDE, then gave some subsequent guidelines, essentially reaffirming that their interpretation of the governor's executive order said that applies to high school athletic events or K-12 athletic events. And then they went on to say, in addition to the hard caps on 25 and 250, that also applied the facility as a whole may not exceed 50% of the total occupancy otherwise permitted by law. So that is the order that everyone's talking about. As we shared on the 15th, and we shared subsequently afterwards on Friday, there have been two developments that folks here in the room have referred to that are consequential here. The first is House Bill 2787, which I'm sure you all know would allow school boards to set up their own health and safety plans for athletics and then allow boards to decide if spectators to attend and what, if any, limitations on that. As one of the speakers had pointed out, there was overwhelming majorities in both the House and the Senate that supported the passage of that bill. The governor had till today to veto that bill or sign it. As he widely announced, he did exercise that right to veto, and he signed that about 4 o'clock today. Part of what I was waiting for was to get confirmation on that fact before I came up tonight. So he did veto that. And as widely reported, I think we can fully expect that the leadership in both the House and the state Senate will take this up, as one of the speakers alluded to earlier. It has to start in the House and then go up to Senate. I don't work with the General Assembly. I work with school districts, so I don't know what their time frame of a vote would be. I don't know what their voting schedules are. But I, as I said back on Tuesday or Thursday, you know, I think we can wait and see, and I fully expect to see action on those items with a legislative move to basically try to invalidate the governor's hard cap of 20 and 25 on events and gatherings. So that's the legislative front. So that is in progress. The other front was the judicial front. And again, many of you have probably read this. There was a case, County of Butler versus Wolf, which was private individuals, some elected officials and counties that challenged various pieces of the governor's July 15th order. For your purposes, the significance of that litigation is there was a direct challenge to the hard caps of 25 and 250 for events and gatherings that was addressed in that litigation. Judge Stickman, in his opinion, struck that down as unconstitutional, as violating the First Amendment. And so he did enter an order in that, with that opinion, that invalidated the regulation as unconstitutional. That he used a slightly different standard than what another federal judge used and the state Supreme Court used to judge other orders, but the significance of Judge Stickman's order, it is the only one that addressed the congregate limits for events and gatherings. That's the only court decision in the Commonwealth that has addressed that issue as of this date. In federal court, the way this works is because Judge Stickman's order essentially calls what they call injunctive relief. I'm not giving you money as damages. I'm giving you an order saying that, you know, this contract, or in this case, this executive order is not enforceable. That's considered injunctive relief. In order for that opinion to be stayed, the governor would need to seek supersedeas or a stay from that order. The governor, through the attorney general, filed that request on Thursday and filed some briefs. Judge Stickman then entered an order, I believe on Friday, if my date's correctly, that the plaintiffs in that case had until Monday noon to file their own briefs in that case. So as of this minute, right now, the Stickman order saying that the 25-250 limit is unconstitutional is on the books as enforceable. And the governor knows that. And the governor knows that because the Department of Education sent Dr. Hollister and every other superintendent in the Commonwealth an email, what, around 2:30 o'clock?
2:30 on Friday.
2:30 on Friday, asking that the school district voluntarily continue to follow the provision set forth in his executive order of July 15th. So as of right now, there would be nothing legally impairing the board from departing from that if you wish to rely upon Judge Stickman's order. The thing that I don't know, and part of the reason why we gave the guidance that was shared with you, is this is a constantly changing situation, meaning it's sort of like, you know, the sands are shifting in the water. We have this House bill that is being moved through, presumably, the House in probably very short order, and then the Senate. Judge Stickman is going to have to act on this request for a stay, and that could happen this evening, it could happen tomorrow, it could happen later this week. I simply don't know. But as I checked the docket, the most recent thing was that the briefs had to be filed. So what I tell you right now in this minute could very well change in the next 24, 36 week or something, for better or worse, depending on what your vantage point on the issue is. But I can tell you right now, Stickman's order has not been stayed, and therefore any school district can rely upon it if it does not wish to comply with the executive order limits of 20 and 20, 250. So that's sort of where things are legally. I know there was a number of questions that board members and Dr. Hollister raised that I tried to address in an email. I did note there's one typo. My secretary was leaving for vacation, so I apologize. I wanted to get that out. So I think there's a missing not. But if there's any specific questions that any of the board members have for me based on that email or anything I said, I'd be happy to answer them.
So one question I would have is that, let's just say we voted tonight to do the 50% occupancy rule across the board, and then let's just say, like, in 4 days, all this changes. Would we have to then wait until the next board meeting to then change anything if we needed to revert something, or is that just kind of going to be it?
Great question. And I wish I can give you a better answer than I'm going to give you right now. With the two tracks that we're looking at, you know, I can speculate as to what I think may happen. You can't necessarily, you know, and people, depending on how you feel about this, you might not like my speculation. But as one of the people in the audience pointed out previously, as to the House bill, if you look at the numbers and the way they voted, those were veto-proof numbers. And, you know, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that both the House and the Senate may override that veto, and they may make that a priority to take that in very short order. So to your question, you know, that veto could be overridden maybe sometime late this week or early next week. As to Judge Stickman's order, in light of the two other cases that I cited and what was shared with you, I believe, on Tuesday or Wednesday, it wouldn't surprise me if Judge Stickman stays his order. But that's just a guess. And, you know, even if he were to do that, I don't know how quickly he would do that. So that's why, you know, all I can tell you is of right now that legally you have a federal district court decision that you can reasonably rely upon if you wish to depart from those limits. How long that basis will exist, I can't tell you. But there is a effort by the governor through the attorney general's office to stay the effect of that. And then simultaneously, as we all well know, we also have a legislative effort to provide school boards with the flexibility that these folks are asking you to do, that presumably is going to work its way through the General Assembly expeditiously. But again, how fast that is, I don't know. So, you know, we could have a situation where you got maybe a couple of days relying on Judge Stickman's, and that could change, and then a couple days later, you have the veto override. But as you folks had pointed out, you got to be able to plan as a board to give authorization to your administrative team. Assuming you give those directions, whether you're talking about the limits that I see on your agenda or what these folks are asking tonight, those things have to be calculated. Presumably, I know a lot of districts that are working with limits need to get tickets and identify who they're going to be distributed to and do that in a safe manner and presumably talk with opposing teams to make sure they're going to show up, depending on what it is you may wish to authorize, and a lot of other logistical issues. So I don't think it's unreasonable if the board, since this is the meeting you have, to take action to provide your administrative team with direction to weigh in on this issue, subject to the understanding that that may have to change in the future. And that change could be, hey, if the House overrides this and the Senate overrides this and we have full discretion, you know, we may take a different approach than what you authorized tonight. Or conversely, if there isn't a veto override and Judge Stickman enters an order, we may have to revisit, you know, what is said. But you do have, I think, a reasonable basis at this juncture to take action and provide direction if you wish to tonight.
Now, our next regular scheduled board meeting would be the 12th of October, I believe it is, the second Monday. We could schedule a board meeting next Monday night and the first Monday in October. How much notice must we give to have a scheduled board meeting?
48 hours, Justin. 24.
24.
The solicitor is here.
Yeah, well, you probably need 48 only to get the necessary advertisement in the newspaper.
Well, that's what, yeah, the 48 is for the newspaper.
We could, that's just my thought, you know, we could approve something tonight and something would change. We could, and we could always cancel that meeting at any time, correct? If we schedule those extra ones, they could be, with so much notice, I guess, has to be given for a cancellation of them.
But it doesn't have to be a newspaper advertisement. You could simply, you know, put it on your website, announce it, post it, and that would suffice.
Okay, thank you.
I don't know if anyone can answer this question, but when we're throwing out numbers like 25% or 50% for indoor capacity, the question I have is about how many people do we usually get attending, for instance, volleyball games indoors? I mean, I guess we can go back to last year. Do we know what the average was? I don't know. Right. And what's the max capacity in this current gym that we're using?
Max capacity is 450.
Okay.
And that number would include the visiting fans, too. What's that? Okay, but the total from last year, that included the visiting fans. Right, yeah, bigger the school or whatever, yeah.
Mr. Schaefer, just a follow-up question. So you said fixed seating capacity is 450. That would not include the playing surface, the people on the field, on the court, et cetera. So the team benches on the sidelines are included in the fixed seating capacity. Thanks.
Would it be at all possible to change that configuration? Just out of curiosity. I mean, I'm not picture. I guess I can't picture it. That's not what I was. I was asking. He said the bench would have to be part of the seating. I'm asking, is there any possible way to make the bench? Yes, on the floor. I guess I'm not picturing what I forget what it looks like. The gym. Okay.
Mr. Litz, I have a question regarding the gatherings and such that you referenced before in Section 3. And I know this is going to be a tough question because it's more of a assumption unless you know specifically of where this might be cited. But would amusement parks potentially be within that gatherings of such?
I have the order in front of me, and I'll just read what it says if that's okay.
Yeah.
For purposes of this order, quote, event and gathering, end quote, is defined as a temporary grouping of individuals for defined purposes that take place over a limited time frame, such as hours or days, period. For example, events and gatherings include fairs, festivals, concerts, or shows, and groupings that occur within larger, more permanent businesses, such as shows or performances within amusement parks, individual showing of movies on a single screen slash auditorium within a multiplex, comma, business meetings or conferences, or each party or reception within a multi-room venue. The term does not include a discrete event or gathering in a business in a retail food services industry addressed in section one. So that's the definition.
Okay, thank you. So for that, I'll at least just mention this to the others on the board that I found from the deputy press secretary for the Department of Health of Pennsylvania that said back when the summer started, now this is months ago, so this is prior to this issue that we're facing now, for amusement parks, gatherings of more than 250 individuals is prohibited, but we will be working with these groups as we move forward to determine a safety and reopening of these tourist destinations in Pennsylvania. To me, it seems if they're going to make money, they'll open, and we should allow a percentage of some kind to open for these parents to see their kids, and these events are essential.
Just as a comment, you know, I almost feel like I should recuse myself from voting tonight just because I have a vested interest, because I have two of my kids are student athletes, and my son is a senior in the marching band. So of course, I mean, it's not going to be what we thought it was. So I sympathize with all you other parents. And so I do think there is something that my desire, of course, is to do as much as we can for these kids, because as much as we are trying to do all we can to honor the government and to protect our administration, which I definitely want to do, but also feel like we have an obligation to protect our students, our athletes, our band members, our cheerleaders, because I've just been talking to a lot of doctors this past week, and they just said they've seen, and we all know this, but more. I personally know two people who have died of drug overdose since this all started, personally, and it's just wreaking havoc on the mental well-being of our youth, our children, and my heart is to that we can do as much as possible to see them encouraged and supported, because it's been as difficult on them as it is on us, and so that's my own personal desire to do as much as we can, and still work within the guidelines as much as we can. But I think that I don't mind stretching them as far as we can take them to support our youth.
Any further comments?
Paul?
I just wanted to thank the administration for coming up with a plan that I think is a very good start, and it allows a lot more people into the events than currently allow, and it's a very good start, and I wanted to thank the administration for doing that.
Any further comments?
Yeah, I think just since Paul, I think you're referencing the email with that referenced some things Market came up with.
That is correct, sir.
Yeah, okay. I guess my question would be that proposal, was that proposed in reference to the potential for an approval outside of the governor's current recommendations, or was that a proposal that you thought would be our plan, so to speak, if there was a change in the current litigation? I'm just looking for clarification, because I don't think that's necessarily what we have proposed as a group, but...
So I asked Mark to draw up a plan based on the discussion the board had last week.
Okay.
Might be good to... could you review that plan once again to refresh our minds here?
Tom, question for clarification for us, for making and going to the motion, if we do need to amend that motion at all, Do I need to take back the other one and then rephrase it, or just rephrase it?
Well, we have a motion and a second, right? So some action should be taken either way.
Simplest way would be to, if you want to vote it down, and then or amend it, one of the two.
You can vote to either amend it or
vote it down.
Or vote it down, yeah. And then start from scratch.
Can we repeat what that motion was, just so we have it fresh in our minds?
Yeah, it's on the agenda.
Oh.
Yeah.
So let me summarize what Mr. Schaefer had put together. It's a 25% capacity for both the stadium and the gymnasium. Significant difference is that for the stadium, we are not counting those on the field in the capacity limit for obvious reasons. They're further separation. Unfortunately, for volleyball, we have to count everybody in the gymnasium for that. The other thing that I would suggest with this plan, and again, the action and the plan are sort of separate. I think if the board makes this decision to move forward, we would adjust the plan based on just little details that need to be ironed out. But in general, the plan that Mr. Schaefer designed also had allowances for spectators, visitors, and I would say we should strike that in order to try to accomplish more social distancing. Even at 25%, we'll be challenged to social distance. I do think that the booster club's plan for the stadium is in line with the administration's thinking in terms of a draft, if in fact the board wishes to move forward and away from the 25-250 limit. And that's general. I mean, Mr. Schaefer did a nice job sort of noting all of the folks who were involved. That would include tickets for band member parents, and we would have to make accommodations for cheerleading parents at some point and do some things. With each of the games, I would submit that we would probably focus on one group or the other to try and get different folks in there. The other thing is, I think the band is also talking about doing a separate night of a show just without that, so they could have plenty of folks in the stadium. I know this past Friday and weekend games, bands played in most cases, they played prior to the game, and then those parents exited, as did the band, so that schools could keep that 250 max.
One question I have is, this is just a hypothetical. I'm just throwing out numbers here arbitrarily. Let's just say we decided tonight to propose, let's do 33% across the board just for right now. And then we said, what if then, like Mr. Litz was saying earlier, like something may come back to us this week where, you know, the way the Senate votes and the veto doesn't go through, and now we don't have those restrictions anymore. Could we vote for something tonight where we say, okay, right now it's 33%, and if that happens, then it immediately gets, the number gets changed without us having to come back for a board meeting to vote separately?
Well, sure, you can put anything into place. A lot of ifs. I think you also need to consider if in fact, you know, if the governor has strong-armed enough House members, then he may no longer have the veto override too. So they may not be able to override his veto. So if you're going to plan, I would plan both directions.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know, that it could be taken away from us. But the bottom line is, if you want to place caveats, so to speak, on the motion, you can certainly do that. You have a motion on the table now. As Mr. Wenzel said, I think it's cleanest to vote that motion up or down, and then you can make additional motions to more closely define what it looks like going forward, if you wish.
As you've been talking to other districts, do you know what they're doing? Like, I tried to find online anything about CV or any of the other ones.
So the superintendents met today via Zoom, and at this point, there's only one other school district in the county. Now, So I should be careful. So on the Zoom, there were 17 school districts represented. Some superintendents couldn't make it was a last minute Zoom because of what happened on Friday. Of the 17, only one other school district is considering breaking away from the 25-250 besides us. There was a mention of boycotting as well, us, by at least one school district.
What do you mean by that?
They would not send their players here to play.
If we exceeded it?
Correct.
Yeah. So then we get the win, wow. Right?
That's only one, and it was only a perhaps. So, you know, that's as good as...
Interesting.
So at this point, we would be one of two thought to be. Again, because of the timing of everything, we're first. So so who knows what boards will do this week and next week?
Sure. Thank you.
So I can amend the motion that I have on the floor, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so I will amend my motion, and I move that we allow a 33% capacity based on the venue total capacity for all extracurricular activities in the district.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to amend the motion from last week, and... I agree. I'll wait for Justin to restate that if necessary. 33% capacity for all extracurricular activities.
I just have a question. It's been seconded, correct?
So yes. Discuss it now? Yeah, it's open to discussion. Yeah.
What's the, in terms of like numbers? What's the difference between 33% and 50%? Just at a, are we talking like hundreds of people or?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I did about it was like 250 for the stadium. It would be like a 180 versus the 111 that Mark did as far as for the capacity for the indoor gym right now. For those would be the two sports that we're talking about.
Sure.
With volleyball and football. So it's an extra, you know, for the volleyball, it'd be an extra 70-something people that would...
By going to 50.
Going to the 33%.
Got
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Okay. So if we go higher than that, it would be a 225.
Got it.
Yeah, so it'd be like 180 for the indoor and 990 for the outdoor at this point.
Thank you.
Yep.
I guess a follow-up question. Have we ever, or would there even be discussion to entertain the idea, can you tell I'm tiptoeing a little bit on this one, but of having volleyball play off-site, not here? I know there's a college in the area that's looking to host, because all of their sports are canceled, activities or sporting teams in their facilities, and they're much larger than ours are. Has that even been entertained? Or would that even be wanted, I guess, by the district from a liability standpoint and everything else?
We hadn't considered it. I would defer to the parents and
sure.
Students as to whether they would like to do that. But from a liability standpoint, that's not an issue for us.
Transportation, no. Logistics. No. Mark, is there an issue from your standpoint?
No, it would just be a matter of what games are not practicing there.
Correct. That's what I would think. Just with games or scrimmages would be off-site.
Mr. Litz, is there any, like if, about litigation, if we have a chance of being sued, if somebody would contract a virus or anything from the not following the numbers that are, is there any reason to, you know, for worry about that?
What I can say is this. I mean, obviously, there isn't much in the way of litigation right now with people that suffered injuries due to COVID. And to be realistic, and maybe it sounded a little bit harsh, I mean, you're only going to have litigation if someone is seriously ill or dies. Someone gets sick for a week and has symptoms and, you know, out of the woods in 2 weeks, I would like to think they're not going to file a lawsuit. The other thing would be is assuming you have the scenario I've just portrayed where someone becomes seriously ill or passes away from COVID and their estate sues, you know, it's going to be incumbent upon them to prove that they got the disease, you know, at a school district sponsored event, and that's the cause for their injuries. But even if they could do that, there are significant legal protections for school districts in Pennsylvania, both under state law and federal law. So there are general immunity protections that apply to all school districts under the Political Subdivision Tort Claims Act that basically says you can't sue a school district for a state tort claim, like an automobile accident or a slip of fall. That's what I mean by a tort claim, unless it falls into one of 11 enumerated exceptions, and a pandemic is not one of those exceptions. So I think there are fairly robust immunity protections in place.
Okay.
But lawyers know that. And so some lawyers do attempt to try to change what would be a garden variety state tort claim into a federal type of claim and bring it in federal court where those immunity protections don't apply. But there are other types of protections that apply in that. Now, whether you get some creative lawyer who tries to argue that a school district maybe didn't follow the governor's order and violated law, blah, 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 and therefore created a state-created danger where they knowingly allowed people to come in and in large numbers. Could that happen? Yeah. The outcome of that case, I don't know what it is, because we're talking about a 100-year pandemic and Section 19.3 hasn't been used yet. But there are significant protections in place for school districts, as long as people are acting, I think, reasonably and appropriately, that should protect against most of those types of claims.
And I agree. That's the key, which the groups here said tonight, that they'd be vigilant about keeping everybody protected at the...
I will point this out is... The masking requirements is under a separate order. So, you know, Judge Stickman's order makes quite clear that the other state orders that the governor has issued about masking and the like isn't challenged, and he's not ruling on those things. And so I think the expectation would be for any entity, public or private, to the extent that the requirements for face coverings would be applicable, that they would be enforced or at least complied with by individuals that wish to take advantage of any opportunity that you would provide to them to attend events. And there may be other additional safety protocols. I could see a district wishing to potentially apply to individuals, again, saying, look, if we're going to sort of, quote, take the risk of having additional people here, we would hope you would reciprocate by engaging these reasonable measures to try to, keep people safe. But again, that would be each individual school district to make those determinations.
Yeah, and I should say that the 33% attendance, I do not believe we would be able to get 6 feet between, even if we had factored in like couples, so to speak, if that matters to you.
Getting back to my, I'd like to see how the other board members feel. How would you feel about scheduling additional meetings to review this after tonight, if things change, whether we could either go up or down with what transpires? How do the rest of you feel about that coming back next Monday in some form to discuss this?
I mean, I would rather err on the side of what Gary said in case this were to happen tomorrow. Let's say, for instance, whatever, and there, each school district can make up their own. I'd rather us create the if then now so that immediately we change whatever it's kind of, they can all, if we say 50%, it's automatically changed. You know what I mean? And that we don't have to wait for the meeting in a whole week to decide that.
All right.
Well, one quick question, Dr. Hollister, is that you're saying you're not sure if we can do the social distancing, but I guess the question I would have is that I would assume that, for instance, at a football game, for instance, I would be sitting with my whole family or
yeah, and that's what's hard. You can't figure
right.
Like just
it's not like what we're doing in the schools,
right, just,
though.
Right, just spitballing it just yeah. Based on numbers depends on you're making sort of assumptions that I'm sort of doing the math in my head at this point. So probably 4 tickets per family. I would say 2 parents and then 2 more tickets for a family. And then, you have the other groups. So it's hard to say because you're not going to go out there and mark off every 6 feet because you're going to have groups together. but I think you put 1,000 people in a 3,000-seat stadium, I think you'll have difficulty maintaining that social distance.
Isn't that, though, if physical distance isn't there, if you're wearing a mask, the physical separation is not in place of the 6 feet, 3 feet, 25 feet, whatever feet we want to call it. If wearing a mask, like in school every day, like at doctors or wherever people are going, if the 6 feet is there, great, you don't have to put it on. If you're within that whatever feet, then that's there. So I appreciate how you said it, Mr. Litz, as far as the mask part of it, that's not part of that order.
Right. So what I'm saying is mask would, and these folks have
correct
said too,
talked,
masks
yeah
are mandatory.
Yes.
No exceptions.
But if we had said, somebody said it earlier about not having visiting teams, but wouldn't that then, if we're not having a visitors, wouldn't that give us more room to spread out?
It does, yeah, yeah. And I would, at this point, I would recommend that we do not include visitors. Unfortunately, you know, it just doesn't, the game's not going to have the same feel. But I think if you want to invite that many people, then you really should not invite visitors.
With all of this, I do think it's important that we establish some kind of system where the other team is aware, whatever we decide tonight, whether it's 30%, 33%, 50%, whatever number is being thrown out, that there's enough time to alert the other team, let those coaches decide if they want to, you know, come to an event where they might be thinking there's only 25. They just need to be aware, you know, for their own health reasons if they're concerned. I think we owe it to the other teams just to kind of make sure they know before they come to our gym that it's going to have more people in it, if we decide that. And if that being said, if there's a team, because I'm nervous about the fact that there was a superintendent who may have suggested that they boycott, I don't want to do something that's going to hurt other children. So I want to help the students here at Garden Spot, you know, be able to have fans and have their support system. I don't want to take away from other senior years of other students, because I will say I believe we are a very extracurricular friendly board compared to some others. And the kids at those schools, you know, it would be fair for them to have to boycott a game their senior year because we wanted extra fans. So I don't know if we could find some type of system, like I said, where we do talk to those coaches, make sure everyone's in agreement, because I don't want to see the boycotting either.
I think really what we're trying to establish, right, is that whether or not as a board we're in agreement that the limits should change, or we should give the administration directive to come up with our own plan in regards to the limits, not necessarily all of the parameters inside of that plan. I don't know that it's our job as a board to be in the weeds that deep.
That's the point I was getting at. If you know, we establish 33% this evening, and say this all goes out the window, and it gets up to 50%, we'd have to have almost that approved beforehand. Correct? Say everything goes our way, the House overrides the governor, and
we don't have to raise it. But
yeah, I mean, but well, formally we're locked into 33%. You know,
but no, but Gary's right. I mean, so the passing of the House bill in question only gives us the authority to do something other than what's already planned. It doesn't mandate that we meet other limitations. So, you know, like you're asking, and like Gary's suggesting, I think, like, even if we come back in a week, because the proposed House bill has gone through the House and the Senate and is in effect, is in force. It doesn't mean a week from now we couldn't come back and say, great, now we have more flexibility, or the same flexibility that we believe we already may have, given the judge in Allegheny who said that the current, without a current stay, these limitations aren't enforceable anyways, right? I mean, that's really what we're talking about here. So, like, nothing about the House bill changes what we're already arguing is our authority.
Yeah. No, I agree with what you're saying. Sorry.
Brian, but it's, I think if something changes, I think we just have to address it when it changes. Because, you know, this whole time we've been kind of going, this is what we're doing for now. If something changes later, we'll change it later. Not making contingency like, oh, okay, if this doesn't work, well, then next week we'll have another meeting to do this. You know, we don't, we haven't done that for anything else, and I don't see why we should start doing that now.
Right, yeah, I'm not saying we need to meet every week or that we need to have contingencies. I think that...
Oh, I know. I was saying I was agreeing with you in case you didn't catch that.
Yeah, I think we, if we are voting now and we have affirm a vote that's been motioned or another motion that changes what's currently in place, I think what we're saying is that we believe that, you know, the circumstances created by the legislative environment have allow us to do that, and that even if something were to change outside of that, you know, unless there's a decrease or a reinforcement of limitations, at which point we may or may not have to adhere to, we'd have to question that. But there, we don't have to meet again to expand necessarily.
All right. Any other comments? You ready to vote? We'll do a roll call on this one.
Mr. Buck?
Yes.
Mr. Conroy?
Yes.
Mr. Dahl?
Yes.
Mr. Irvine?
Yes.
Mrs. Geyer?
Yes.
Mrs. Mayo?
Yes.
Mr. McCarroll?
Yes.
Mr. Naranjo?
Yes.
Mr. Wenzel?
Yes.
All right. 9-0.
Motion carries 9-0. As amended. All right.
Good.
We're good.
So 33% it is.
Yes, it is.
Okay. We're finished with Mr. Litz. It seems like we pay him by the word, but it's actually by the minute. So we could let him go. That'd be all right with me. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Litz.
Yes, thank you for your information. All right. Before he asks me. Thank you. Have a good night. All right. You have the consent agenda before you. Do I have a motion on the consent agenda? The moved. Is there a second?
Second.
Properly moved and second. Any discussion on it? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Scroll. All right, we're into reports. Lancaster County Tax Collection Bureau.
Yes, we did not have a meeting this month. Our next meeting is November 11th, where we will discuss and approve the 2021 operating budget.
All right, any questions for Keith? All right, moving forward, like the IU 13, Paul?
The Lancaster Lebanon IU board met via Zoom on September 9th, and given the health issues of a lot of our students, the IU is having a lot of issues with COVID, and they have a lot of sick students and employees and quarantined, and so they're going through a lot of issues and a lot more than we could ever imagine, I believe, as lucky as we are here at Elanco compared to what they're going through. So I just thought I'd throw that out there. The board approved a payment of invoices in the amount of $16,838,436.05. Business services had asked for and received approval of 16 new or additions to existing contracts. Early childhood and special education services asked for and were approved 11 new or additions to existing contracts. Human Resource Services had 2 new contracts approved. Under personnel actions, we had 20 resignations, 6 retirements, 23 new hires, 30 change of positions or salaries, and 9 leave of absences. And the IU-13 also voted on the PSBA officers and insurance trust trustees. And that includes my report. I did hand each of the board members and the administrators a report to the local board, which I gave you, and the Helping Districts Help Students. If anyone has any questions, I'll answer it now or get back to you with the answer.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Any questions for Paul? All right. Hearing none, the Lancaster CTC.
Hi. The JOC met way back when on August 27th. We discussed the enrollment for the CTC was down from what it initially was at the end of the school year. It was down from 91% capacity down to 86%, and adult education enrollment was way down. They didn't give exact numbers of that. I just know there's none at Brownstown campus this year. They set their goals for the school year. It was basically to identify areas that need improvement, customized training for that, to set their standard for the NOCTE test, which is the National Occupational Competency Testing Institute. It does basically the abilities to perform skills needed in a career. It's like standardized tests and assessments for CTE students. They set a goal of 95% pass either competent or advanced, and they're hoping to get 75% of those, you know, the students to be advanced to get the CTE Excellence Award. They were at 89% 2 years ago, because last year they didn't have the NOCTE test because of everything that's going on. Another big goal that they have is to have every student obtain at least one industry certification as recognized by PDE or industry when they graduate and leave. That's kind of all I have. There's a lot changing, but it's like the meetings are the fourth Thursday of the month, so I feel like I'm always a month behind in my reporting, but it's just how everything falls. If anybody has any questions.
Any questions? Okay, great job. Legislative, number one on my list was the spectator limits. Well, that answer came sort of from Harrisburg today, so I move on to some other ones that could be of interest. Senate Bill 530, which Senator Martin from Lancaster County was the push behind, is about sexual assault. Any student convicted of a sexual assault against a student at the same school, obviously the victim and the one committing the offense attend the same school, that student must be expelled, transferred, or reassigned to another school or educational program. I'm not sure if there's a House bill to accompany that yet, but I'm sure that would go through the House relatively easy.
I'm sure Mr. Martin's not providing funds for that either.
I'm sure he doesn't. I was going to say that gets into a lot of gray area there to figure out who's going to take that student, first of all.
Yep.
Senate Bill 869, which is 9/11 and Pearl Harbor Day, moment of silence. PDE is required to develop curriculum or valid some type of in-service training programs made available to school entities to cover the U.S. recovery response to the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and Flight 93. That's being pushed through to, you know, some of these dates. You know, come next year it'll be 20 years for 9/11 and, I don't want to test my math in Pearl Harbor, but it was in 1941. That's all I know, way before. But hey, the point is that all the students are in school currently with 9/11 weren't even born at that time. So, and as we drift away from historical events, we tend to forget the significance and what we went through as a country, not just from the event, but over the coming years from those events. And the final one, it's about updating the science curriculum. The State Board of Education, the science, the current science hasn't been reviewed since 2002. There have been recent changes in the school code concerning graduation requirements, anywhere from compulsory school age 6 to terminology for career and tech schools. Work began in reviewing science in September of 19, and this will go in effect in the 2024-25 school year. I don't know if Nadine or Dr. Hollister, you have any comments to make in that, because that's a long time, 2002.
Yeah, that's pretty embarrassing. There was only one other state that had science curriculum older than us, and that was Mississippi. So it's been way overdue. The good news is one of our teachers applied to be on that task force, and compliments to Jason Karczewski. He's an elementary STEM teacher. He was awarded a spot on that committee. So we actually have representation from the district in great. Writing those standards. So congratulations to Jason.
Yeah, that's great. And that concludes my legislative report, unless there's any questions. Hearing none, we'll move on to the superintendent's report.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a few items. Number one, I just want to compliment everyone who did their jobs and made it possible for us to contact Trace today. As you know, we announced our first COVID in-house on-site case. And because of the protocols we have in place, because of the cohorting we have in place, because of some of the things that we've done on buses and all of those, we were able to very accurately establish the folks who needed to be quarantined. So we got lucky in some ways. Just about a dozen students had to be sent home today, as well as a few adults that had to go as well. So we're awaiting results now for all those folks. But because we have such tight protocols and really have know where everyone is at all times, so to speak, we were able to process that pretty well today. So I was pretty pleased. So for what it's worth, the folks are doing their jobs. I did get out to two elementary schools and toured on Friday at both Blue Ball and Brecknock, and I was heartened by what I saw in terms of the energy and dedication of both the learners and the adults. But I will also tell you, there were a few teachers holding back tears. They are taxed in the system that we've asked them to do. They're particularly concerned, especially those who are overly conscientious. They're worried about the learners at home, et cetera. So it is a strain on everyone. I don't want to sugarcoat that everything's great. I had a great visit. It was great to see our kids, and they were all engaged and all wearing their masks and doing everything they need to do. But it's challenging. So I'll finish on some high notes. We did get a report from Jamie Lisey. She's our food services director, that her state review is officially closed and all went well. Given everything that she has done with her team in the last 4 or 5 months, to come back with a clean review is remarkable. If you consider the 12,000 to 13,000 meals they were giving out every week, from March on, phenomenal job by Jamie and her team. So congratulations to her. And then finally, a few student items. Thank goodness for our ag department. Got a nice report here from Katie Rank, Catherine. Some great things happening for FFA. As you all know, several years ago, I was very, very concerned about that program. And we made some personnel changes and got the right people in and are doing as good a job as I've seen FFA run in my time here, in my 15 years here. But a couple of noteworthy points. They did have officer elections recently, and among those officers, I want to highlight two in particular. The president, Abigail O'Neill, who you heard from earlier, not only is she president here, but she also is serving as the Lancaster County FFA vice president. So congratulations to Abby. And also treasurer here, Jack McCarty, is also serving as the Lancaster County FFA president. So not only are those kids doing extra duty here, but they're also serving at the countywide level. So congratulations. For those of you who know what the Lancaster Farm Paper is, my dad has been a faithful reader from as long as I can remember. We've had 6 students profiled in that paper, and we'll have several others profiled in the last 5 months for their supervised agricultural experience, the SAE. I think maybe just Tom would know what that is on the board anymore. We've had FFA representation in the past, more so than Tom.
Well, I'll make a comment about the Lancaster Farm. If you want to read that properly, it takes probably, by the time you're done with the one issue, by the next one comes, you'll be ready for it.
My papa, he just looks at the sales. He's always trying to, 80 years old, and he still wants to buy stuff. So congratulations to those students, and it's great press for us. A couple others from FFA. The National FFA, we were awarded a grant. Our ladies up there applied for it and got a $4,500 grant to support aquaponics system that we're putting in up there. And then finally, our chapter was recognized as a national FFA organization this year. This means that we are a premier FFA program with our state and our meeting and or exceeding organizational requirements.
I just want to add one thing. I don't know whether it went out to the rest of the board. A few weeks ago, Katie sent an email out that, of course, with the New Holland Fair canceled, there's a lot of students that actually for the last year or so have been raising animals to show lambs and pigs and that such. At privately, they're organizing something there for the students to have there to reward them for their work that they put in in the last year to cover... for the projects.
Yeah, that was covered well in the Penny Saver just recently. Yes. Yeah, that was on the front page. Mm-hmm. The last thing I do have just is about one of our alumni. This name will sound familiar, Brandon Bixler. He's a 2019 graduate, earned his American degree, is the highest degree in FFA, with less than 1% of members earning it. So that is a significant achievement. If you remember Brandon, he was just a quality guy. Real proud of Brandon. Proud that he's an ambassador for our school district and our community out where he's doing all of his things. So congratulations to Brandon. And that does conclude my report. Thank you.
Okay, any questions for Dr. Hollister?
I only have one quick question. When it comes to some of the online, I know we talked about it a little last week, and people, I'll use the word, migrating back and forth from online to staying home. I've just heard a few things here and there that, I mean, I would tell everybody, like, there should be a deadline. I don't know if we have a deadline. I don't think we did from what I understand. I just want to clarify, do we have some kind of, like, hardcore, you got to decide?
We don't, Scott. We tried. We talked about that as an administrative team. The problem is folks' circumstances keep shifting. So, for example, we pitched 12 students out today. So they have to go in virtual tomorrow. Yeah. And what we're also finding is some of our teachers, now we've had under a dozen teachers tested for COVID so far all have been negative, thankfully. But when they're out and waiting for their tests, which, by the way, takes 4 or 5 days, yet the national football team can do it in 15 minutes, which is just a whole nother issue. It's just embarrassing that we're here 6 months in and we can't get a test for 4 or 5 days. So our teachers have to sit out 4 or 5 days. Now, what has happened so far is they've been willing to in-person in and then in-person back out. Like, we're doing the best we can, and it's not perfect. And so what we have to do is get a substitute teacher to sort of manage a classroom while the teacher's remoting in and, in some cases, remoting back out as well.
So they are doing that from their homes as teachers, and then I kind of piggying on that as far as the Wi-Fi connections and connectivity that the students even have based on the survey that you gave us tonight, is that, I mean, I would assume that's probably some of the home issue more than it is anything on our end when it comes to things like whether video or sound is negative. I mean, again, that's probably a home thing more than anything, correct?
Correct. Now, we've had a few issues that were ours. Like last Monday, mm-hmm. our Wi-Fi was down for a couple hours. That was on us.
Sure.
But for the most part, it's external. And for those of you who have Verizon, there's been an ongoing Verizon issue in this area for several days now. Those we can't control that. So that is an issue. And then there were some limits with our Atlantica Online group, that group of students, there are some limits with some of the things, the software that they're using as well. So we've had some challenges. We're ironing all those out. I comparatively speaking, we are doing really well. I can speak from firsthand experience that we're doing well from some compared to some other schools.
Yeah. I have a question for Nadine. I know it's very preliminary. What's the response have been to full-day kindergarten?
We have, at this point, I believe we have six. I can double-check that. We have six that have gone part-time. Most everybody else has gone full-time.
Okay, I was just curious what the what we were at there. Thank you. Any other further comments? Do I have a motion to close the meeting?
Second.
Been properly moved and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. See you next month. Nick. I pride myself in responding. I couldn't open